For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Gentlemen, education. Now, education is one of those things that, you know, it's a wide subject. And most recently, we've been looking at, the debates on getting the schools reopened and all that type of thing going on. But I want to take a little broader view of education and, are we looking at just a parochial, a public, a homeschool environment, those kinds of things? I know it even goes as far as, is college for everybody? Because one of the biggest things we're dealing with in right now is the fact that, people are coming out of school, out of college with $100,000 in school loan debt, whereas somebody who graduated from high school with them went into an apprenticeship as a plumber, and they're already making $100,000 a year. So, there's all kinds of different directions we can go with this. But, the importance of education can't be understated. As a matter of fact, my father-in-law encouraged all of his kids to go to college, get a degree. And, his statement was, I don't care if your degree is in underwater basket weaving. Go to college and get a degree. And his kids are all very successful. They're doing quite well. And, but I got to admit, two or three of them, they got their degree. They're not working in that field. So, the value of education versus, what you're going to do to make a living, how do those go together? And, from the overall standpoint, what's the value of education? And is it specifically tied to earning a living?
It is tied to earning a living, and but it's certainly not limited to that.
Yeah, I think you. When we talk about education, as you said, it's a very broad topic, and I think you got to break it down into a couple of different types of education. You've got what I would call practical or vocational education, which is crucial. You have to be able to learn skills. You have to be able to learn how to do things. And, I think you can make a strong argument that, a lot of that is lacking. It used to be, as a young man grew up, he would learn how to keep his house up, how to work on his car, how to make sure that everything was fixed around the house, etc. And you see articles that type of education has been lacking for a generation or so. So on the one hand, you have that type of skill-based education, but then you also have an education that is character forming. And I think when people think of education, they think of the learning for the sake of learning, learning so that you know how to learn. And there's a value in that. But those are two very different types of education.
Yes. And I'll go back to maybe the starts off to Aristotle. I love Aristotle. And one of the things he reminds us to do is ask about the purpose. So what's the purpose of education? That to me is one of the starting points. But I would say the dominant theme when I've entered into conversations about education, it's usually a relatively narrow, important but narrow focus of technical training aimed at providing for oneself and kind of employment, earning power, that sort of stuff, and that certainly is part of it. That's part of education, but that's a narrow lane to stay in.
Yeah. And
it's indispensable,
but if you go back to Aristotle, Aristotle starts from the standpoint of all men desire to know, and there's a happiness in knowing. Mm-hmm. You know, when you figure something out, when you know something, when you understand something, when your mind can grasp it and get around it, that's fulfilling. You know, you find a certain joy in knowledge for knowledge's sake. And Aristotle would say that's really the fulfillment and purpose of education, is to know just for the pure joy and sake of knowing. And now, of course, he was a Greek, and quite honestly, they went to bed and slept on the equivalent of park benches at night. So, you know, technologically, we've come a long way. And a lot of that is because we've shifted our emphasis away from knowing for the sake of knowing what something is to knowing how to do things. And that technical knowledge that goes along with kind of a technical skill set. And, you know, now education, as you said, is geared towards that how to, knowing how to do things, how to contribute, how to manipulate the environment around us. So those are sort of two different facets. And I think they come from two different ages too. You know, if you look at the purpose of an education from the Greeks and classical studies, it's going to be more knowledge for knowledge's sake. You hit the Renaissance and you hit modernity and you hit modern thought, and education is for the sake of doing. It's for the sake of creating. It's for the sake of manipulating and teasing out of nature's secrets so that we can manipulate nature and make nature do our bidding. So, which I guess that sounds a little sinister, but
I mean, what's going through my mind as you were saying that is, it also seems historically part of the setting would be, you know, who had access to education. And then I think you're right. If you were one of the few that could be a philosopher like an Aristotle, then you could dedicate yourself to kind of learning for learning's sake, knowledge for knowledge's sake, that kind of thing. But I think through most of history, and still in lots of parts of the world, one's life has to really be occupied with simply sustaining one's putting a roof over one's head, putting surviving the elements, all that kind of stuff. I think most of history meant that you were going to, I just think of going to Connor Prairie. When you go to Connor Prairie, you don't see a whole lot of time in your day to, you know, waxing philosophically. I mean, you got a washboard out, you're scrubbing your clothes in the cold water down by the river, and you're blacksmithing. And so I do think education had
there's definitely a schoolhouse there. There's definitely a building set aside for education, even there at Connor Prairie.
Yeah, but that's still a relatively new development in history. And I think the American project, I think, is unique, or one of the few, pretty unique, in that the effort to educate everyone has been part of the project.
Yeah, so the idea that an education is for everyone is definitely a more modern idea. And America, I think, had a dedication to that. Maybe not even really from the very, very beginning. But, you know, it goes back to our Protestant roots with education, that to be able to understand the Bible, everybody had to read. And everybody had to be educated to a certain amount to be able to do that. So when you had the Puritans come over here, you did have a strong emphasis on everybody being educated to a certain extent, and not just to be able to read the Bible, but to be able to understand it. So an understanding of history and Bible history and that kind of thing as well. And then, you know, after the American Revolution, that ideal went wild, like all American ideals seem to do in the French Revolution. So you had the American concept of education, and then the French Revolution really took that to an extreme of everybody must get educated, and we must provide an education, you know, that is equal from top down for everybody. And I think the ideal of a lot of the I guess revolutionaries in the French Revolution was that everybody would have a university degree in philosophy. So everybody would be a philosopher from peasant on up. And so they started to
Well, that's a kind of utopia, yeah. Nirvana. I could see why that would be a goal.
Now, but here's the funny thing. We do kind of chuckle at that idea. And it does raise a question. Is education, is the same amount of education, is everybody capable of it? And is it therefore, or is education by its nature sort of an elitist activity?
Well, I think education to occur requires a certain amount of leisure time. Because even in the recent past, there's plenty of people, stories of plenty of people whose experiences that their education is disrupted because they had to go to work. So plenty of children, young adults, because of their family setting, weren't able to continue with a public free education because maybe they had to help with the family farm or they had to go get a job to help pay the rent. So there's still disruption in that whole thing, in the whole educational process. So you do have to have, enough leisure time in the household in order not to put the children to work in maintaining the household so that they can go to school and they can do the homework and they can learn. And I think that's where I was going earlier is that having that kind of leisure time is far more contemporary than it had been in the past. So there's other barriers to education, but one of the big barriers is having time to actually do it.
Yeah, and in the past that may or may not have been the case. I mean, we can kind of argue to the extent that there was education going on freely within society, you know, back into the Middle Ages and all of that. But
not for everyone. But everyone could do it.
Not everyone could do it. But I
would say probably not even the majority of people.
I think there's some historical evidence and there's some good evidence that you had cathedral schools, you had schools and education, you had
But who was able to attend? That's where I disagree.
That's what I'm saying. That a lot more people were able to attend than what was originally or what used to be kind of construed and thought in the past. But nonetheless, looking at the contemporary setting, most people do go to school. There's very, very few people who do not go to school. And as a matter of fact, in most countries, people are required to go to school. It's a requirement. You have to be educated. You have to go to school. And so, looking at the purpose of education from a contemporary setting, looks like we're coming up on time for a break, but I think we'll pick that up as we come off the break and talk about why is it that we find education has to be mandatory.
And we'll be back with more learning about education right after this message. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor, tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa. Play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. Once again, I'm Kent Blanford in studio with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Today we're talking education and, education in the modern sense today. My question is, at one point in history, a university education was a university education. You went, you got, the studies that were available at your particular school. Everyone went through the same classes, same availabilities, those kinds of things. Today, education has become so specific. We've broken everything out, and now you either have to study a BA, a Bachelor of Arts, or a Bachelor of Science. And if you go one direction or the other, that'll determine which classes you're taking. I mean, a BA is going to be more likely with your liberal arts degree. Your Bachelor of Science is just that, is going to be a science degree. And it's going to be more narrowly focused on, you know, the field you're wanting to go into. Have we put ourselves into a position where education is now dropping us into little boxes as to if you have a BS, you've got to do this. If you've got a BA, you're going to do this. Or is the liberal arts education, you know, a way for everyone to get started and then branch out?
Well, that's a great question. I think one of the contributors to the setting we find ourselves in of, I think you're pointing to like hyper specialization, is because there has been such a exponential growth in knowledge. Pardon me. Around, so if you wanted to, for example, if you're a young person, say in high school, and you want to become a software engineer, that field has an immense amount of technical sophistication that you have to not only intellectually perform at a very high level, but you have to really narrow to get to really advance in that field. You have to restrict your learning because of time and resource constraints to maybe that field alone to get to where you can maybe secure a job as a software engineer with like a high tech company. So that's part of the problem, is that to get that advanced knowledge in a specialized field requires an immense amount of dedication to just that field, because there's only so many hours a day, so much energy, so much resources, blah, blah, blah. So it doesn't lend itself. Some fields just don't lend itself to a broader education if you're going to start down a path like that.
Yeah, and education now is much more dependent on instruction and training. And, mm-hmm. You know, in
many fields, absolutely.
And actually I would argue almost in all fields. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be that the way you would educate yourself, you know, if you think about somebody like Abraham Lincoln, right? Abraham Lincoln was an autodidact, right? He taught himself by and large, mm-hmm. you know, reading law books at night. And then he sat for the bar, you know, and he was an extraordinary person. So, I mean, you can kind of look at him as being a little bit exceptional, but he wasn't that rare. There were a lot of people that was the way they were educated. They educated themselves. When you went to a university, the point of going to the university was to surround yourself with other scholars. Yes, you had instructors. Yes, you had people that would lecture. But the point was the academic community that you lived in. And, you know, iron would sharpen iron. And so just being in that environment, talking with other people, to a good extent, you would teach yourself. And, you know, if you went to the university to study the liberal arts, you would be studying those arts of grammar, logic, rhetoric, math, you know, arithmetic, geometry, you know,
astronomy.
I'm not sure astronomy and music, you know, those went by the, but really what those were applied arithmetic and geometry. So you had the application of geometry in astronomy. You had the application of arithmetic in music. So those were kind of the applied sciences. But the fact of the matter is, those skills that you learned, those arts in the liberal arts, were more or less dedicating our time to in primary and secondary education rather than higher education at the university level. So we're getting a liberal arts education in theory. I know it's not necessarily happening in practice all the time, but we're getting a liberal arts education at the high school level so that when we go to college, if you're so inclined, you can study, yeah, the applied sciences, where you do need a lot of instruction and a lot of training and technical skill to teach you that, or the humanities, where once again, to study the humanities, to study history or political science or those types of things, you really do need an instructor. You need somebody to walk you through those things. You need somebody to guide you beyond just the ability to kind of teach yourself. So in the modern educational setting, you are much more at the mercy and much more need somebody to instruct you. Where in years past, education was very much a, you know, sort of pursuit that you would, you could and did do sort of individually.
Yeah, I think the demands of the modern setting are such that you do need a very broad set of competencies and understandings and knowledge to make one's way through the world in the contemporary setting.
Right.
Given all the things that you encounter, like Lincoln never had to, he never had to learn how to operate or fix an automobile.
Right.
And going back to an earlier point, which reminds me, I want to bring this back up. You at the beginning of the show, you talked about, Mark, a little bit about how, you know, some of the, what may have fallen by the wayside is around householding, repairing things around the house. And I think that's a mixed bag, because there are certain things, certainly around the house, that some people are very good at it, fixing up certain things. But there are aspects of technology, I think in most homes, at least in my home's pretty average, like I can't fix a thermostat. Like, I have to replace it. Or we can't, like, fix a television anymore. Like, when we were young, growing up, if our television went out, that you'd call, like, Sears, and the television repairman would come over with a box of, like, tubes and stuff like that, and he'd take the back off the TV, and he'd fiddle around with it for an hour or two, and he'd fix it. Well, now, if your TV stops working, you really don't call anyone to fix it.
No, you call the electronics recycler.
Right, exactly. Or you take it back to wherever, Best Buy or wherever you got it, and you get a replacement. Hopefully, they replace it for free if it's a. But there's no fixing certain things. It's very difficult to work on a new car. By new, I mean like anything in the last maybe 10 or 20 years. Most of that is out of our reach because we don't have the technical skill in order to do it. Even when your car's worked on, because I've had to have mine worked on a few times. It's not a lot of like we're gonna fix what's wrong. It's more like they find the part that's wrong or bad and replace the part. So I had a transmission problem. I think in the old days, you'd take the transmission apart and you'd find the gizmo that went, the gear, whatever went wrong. You do that and you put it back. No, basically what they do, if the transmission's wrong, they take the whole thing off. And they order a whole new train and just pop the new one back on. So the fixing and stuff has moved. My point is, it's moved beyond, not all of it, but a lot of it has moved beyond what any one of us has direct access to in terms of knowledge. You need to go to like an automotive school to do, if you want to do the bulk of things that might come up with your automobile.
Yeah, technology has certainly changed education significantly. And a lot of it is because of the complexity that the technology creates. I mean, the world is a much...
The sensors in the car alone.
Right, exactly.
Imagine if you owned a Tesla, Mark. Imagine trying to fix something that goes wrong on that. No way. Not going to happen.
Right. And
you probably can't even change the oil. Oh, there is no oil. It's a battery. Yeah. So...
Yeah. And you know, even around the house, you're right. Exactly right. You know, the technological sophistication of, you know, even just everyday objects are kind of beyond the competency. And so we have specialization. We have people that are specialized.
I mean, you'd never take a clock to go get fixed, would you? You'd replace it.
Right, right, exactly. Or a watch. You know, the idea of a watch repairman.
People don't even wear watches anymore.
Yeah.
For the most part. Well, they go Fitbit, which does all sorts of other things. But
right, but once again, there's not a repairman that you can take that to.
You're not going to fix your smartphone if it goes wrong.
So that leads to further specialization within education. Right. The ability to have the technical skill to, as you said, produce these things. At this point, we're not repairing them. We're reproducing them and recreating them all the time. But the ability to design them, produce them, make them, that takes a lot of study, a lot of skill, a lot of education. And so a lot of our educational time is spent on that rather than, you know, a more broad-based sort of classical type of education where you would have a little bit more of a generalization rather than specification. However, you know, I think there are topics that we all generally need to know. And I think the fact that we have lost the competency to a certain extent to teach ourselves that general range of knowledge, I think that's led to a lot of the conflict that we see in society, the inability to come to agreement, the inability to dialogue with each other, the inability to pursue what's true versus what's false, the ability to be duped, lied to, manipulated through any means. You know, I think we're more susceptible to that because we've become so specialized in our education. We've spent all of our time trying to figure out how to improve the latest iWatch and make a new iWatch. We spent so much time doing that we've lost the ability to be able to discuss politics or talk about history or you know, teach ourselves the basic virtues of living within in society. And so I think there's a give and take there. You know, when you start spending so much educational time on technology, I think you lose a lot of valuable education that had taken place in the past.
Well, I think one of the things you're looking at there is simply the fact that education isn't just learning how to do specific things. Education in many ways is learning how to learn, because there's more that you need to be able to absorb, that you need to be able to take in, and there's going to be more of the Catholic Cave right after we take a break. We'll be back with more Looking at Education on the Catholic Cave. You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy.
So the scan button brought you here. Awesome. We like company. Get to know us. And if you have to leave, come back. You're always welcome. Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, Kent Blanford, and we are talking today about education. We started off trying to talk about the purpose of education, and we've been talking a little bit about how technology and how I think education differs in a contemporary setting in the past. And right before the break, Kent, you brought up the idea that it used to be that, you know, you would learn how to learn. So the purpose of education was to teach yourself how to learn and to get the skills. And, you know, that really goes back to the traditional liberal arts. You know, when we look at a university today, we've got the different schools. We've got the business school. We've got the
engineering,
the environmental science school,
humanities.
But rather than a humanities, you still have a school of arts and sciences. And what the arts and what the sciences have to do with each other has been completely lost because we've shifted from the liberal arts to the humanities. Mm. So going back to what the liberal arts were, that really was the study of how to study. So the liberal arts really were those arts. And when you think of an art, it's the Greek sense of techne, right? So it's the Greek sense of being able to do something. The liberal arts were those arts that allowed you to spend your leisure time learning. So traditionally you had the trivium, which were the three, and these are the language-based liberal arts when you look at it. So you had grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Those were the three language-based. So and today we still have those, but those are usually, at least the grammar and the logic are usually more of an elementary school based type of thing. You learn language, you learn how language works, you learn how sentences stick together. I don't think people are forced to diagram sentences anymore. I may be aging myself. I remember diagramming
sentences. I'm not sure. I remember doing it.
I don't remember how to do it.
Right.
But anyway,
adverbs, adjectives.
Exactly. Right. And then based off of that, then you have logic. You have the patterns of how you prove things, how things fit together to decide whether they're true or whether they're false. You know, you nowadays, I think logic confines itself to what's informal logic. So trying to find those logical fallacies and trying to spend time looking through advertising to trying to figure out how they're manipulating you in the advertising world.
I think it's taken on a new moniker. I think a lot of when I hear It's referred to more often, and it's different anyway. But critical thinking.
Yeah, critical thinking. That's perfect. Critical thinking, exactly.
Which can include elements of formal and informal logic, but includes a lot of other stuff too.
And rhetoric in some ways is left almost as a sort of an optional course of study in high school.
That's what Facebook is for. And Instagram. Yeah, your rhetoric.
But you know, you can take speech class, you can take debate class, you can take classes in high school that teach you the skills of public speaking, of debate, of those types of things. But there's still skills. You know, there's still skills to allow you to be able to learn. You know, I would say a lot of kind of advanced reading is based more around rhetoric, being able to get the central ideas and main ideas out of a piece that you're reading. But all of those are the language arts, the language-based liberal arts. And then you have the quadrivium, which are the other four arts. And those are the more mathematical arts. So you've got arithmetic and geometry. Those are pretty obvious what those are. Mm-hmm. And then traditionally you had astronomy and music, and those were applications. Those were the applied mathematical
astronomy
sciences.
Astronomy was a kind of physics almost.
So now instead of arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy, now we have arithmetic, geometry, algebra, which is applied arithmetic when you really think about it, and then you have trigonometry and calculus, which is applied geometry, and so you've got kind of those. But those, once again, all of those liberal arts, those are confined to elementary school and high school now. We don't necessarily carry those arts unless you want to specialize and push the edge of knowledge in any one of those fields, we don't really study those at a university setting. But we still have the School of Arts and Sciences, so we still have the school that is dedicated to those arts, but their application then is in the humanities. And so the humanities are that's an invention of the Renaissance and the and I guess modernity of those sort of those sciences, those bodies of knowledge that lead us to understanding humanity and human beings and further culture even further. But I don't know. All of that digression of what the liberal arts are is to say that we still do concentrate on learning for learning's sake, but in theory you're supposed to be getting it at the elementary and high school age, and then you're supposed to be applying it when you get to the university level. At least that's the way I see it.
Yeah. I think that ideally, once you complete a high school level education, 12th grade, the goal should be to have a foundation from which you can further build. And then Kent kind of brought the question up earlier about whether or not, university or college is for everyone. I think right now it's about 30% of Americans achieve a bachelor's degree. And I would say it's not for everyone. And not for everyone immediately right out of high school either. And it may, you have more and more adult learners. So people who maybe decided to or unable to go to college or university, took a different path for some reason, and then later on in life decided to reconnect. There's a lot of that goes on too. But I do think there's some people are just learn and have a vocation that takes them in a different direction other than college and university. And I think Kent was kind of talking about it, but like trades are a great example. So vocations that take one into, say, becoming an electrician or a plumber or another type of craftsman, a journeyman, all sorts of things where people find tremendous amounts of fulfillment and a way in which they develop their talents.
Yeah, and I think the university is more and more becoming a sort of advanced vocational school in some ways. I mean, you go to the university to study engineering, or you go to the university to study, well, I guess that would be chemical engineering, applied chemistry. Mm-hmm. But more and more you're going to the university for the sake of learning the skills of not a trade, but a profession, And so it becomes a sort of advanced professional training, rather than a I guess you could say more theoretical, science-based. If you want that sort of theoretical education, you really have to stay in school until you're at the PhD level, to where now you're spending your time almost purely on theory. But even that, there's a different emphasis, and this is something that I think has changed tremendously. Education used to be geared towards mastery, right? It used to be geared towards getting your head around and understanding an entire body of a science. And now, as specializations happened, now the idea is progress. So the idea, you know, if you want to be successful as a university professor, you don't need to get the well-rounded total understanding of your science or your specialty. You want to be pushing the edges of that. And so you want to be publishing papers, or you want to be doing research that's pushing the edge of whatever that science is. And that leads to further specialization, so that you're not necessarily getting a full rounded mastery of the body of knowledge that you're studying, but you're looking at the edges of it, and you're trying to find your niche and your specialty to be able to push the boundaries of knowledge for everybody's sake. And that's a very different emphasis, even at the higher education level.
Yeah, I think one of the things, too, that makes that or causes that to happen is there's just so much knowledge that's been developed, let's say, and that's accessible, that it's impractical, I think, in a lot of fields to you can't attain. The body of knowledge is so vast, you can't. You can't possibly, one person can't possibly, or certainly not a lot of people, can't possibly grasp all the knowledge, because you simply don't have time to do it. So, for example, you couldn't, if you wanted to study physics, you couldn't possibly, you have to specialize at some point. Yes, you can get you can have a general foundation, but at some point, to be a physicist, you're going to have to find an area to specialize within the category of physics, like quantum mechanics or something, because you can't, that field alone, quantum mechanics, is can take a lifetime to exhaust in terms of acquiring the knowledge that already exists, much less discovering new stuff. So that I think is the challenge now. They say now, you probably heard that, a lot of listeners probably heard this. Yeah, you know, they say that think of a conventional Sunday newspaper, that there's more information in the Sunday edition of the Indy Star than someone in the Middle Ages probably encountered in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And so our problem, and then we all know that with our experience with the internet, right? There's no way. There's the problem is that the knowledge is now, it's like you got to filter out the problem. There's too much in a certain sense. You've got to make these choices because of the simple limitations, because we're limited as human beings.
But technology has also impacted that, because technology has kind of created the ability to have all of that knowledge at your fingertips. So no longer to be
right.
To be a competent physicist, you really don't have to know the entire body of physics. You have to know enough to be able to research and find what you need to know where to go to find it, and have that kind of knowledge of knowing your field well enough to be able to continue to do research within it and look for the information and know where the information is. But you don't have to have a mastery of that in your head. You don't have to be able to recall those facts at a moment's notice, like you used to well before, you know, online libraries or even library technology, you know, of card catalogs and large, huge card libraries.
You're dating yourself there, buddy. Yeah. Card catalogs.
But you think of the progress of cataloging information that we've come across, even just within our lifetimes, Tim, of moving from, you know, having everything in a physical box with little cards of where the books were to go find the information, to moving to everything suddenly being on microfiche. You remember what a big advance the leap forward microfiche were?
Yeah, I hated that.
It didn't last long, but there were microfiche out there. But you could pack so much more information into that little film that you would look in that big machine. But then with computers, you know, with computers, suddenly now you had a storage base that you could store all of that in a box,
right?
I mean, and you could put an entire library on your desk. And now you don't even have to do that. Now you just have a computer that's an outlet to the internet that has, you know, the universe of everything you could possibly want to know. So the technology alone has led to where we don't necessarily need the same mastery of a subject that we used to.
Unless, of course, you're a doctor, in which case I want them to have the absolute mastery of the subject that they are dealing with, which is, in most cases, you know, your body. So we're going to take a look at where education is going and, you know, what we think, you know, is a good basis for education in the future. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Boy, it sure is dark in here. I guess that's why they call it The Catholic Cave. Each Tuesday at noon, Saturday at 9, and Sunday at 11 a.m., The Catholic Cavemen, Timothy O'Donnell, Mark Tuttle, and Kemp Blanford, as well as lots of interesting guests, shine a Catholic light on just about everything, from ancient Greek philosophers to doctors of the church to today's movies and TV. Nothing escapes their ever-inquisitive eyes. It's a fun, informative program. If you own or manage a business, you can help keep programming like The Catholic Cave on the air by becoming an underwriter. It's not costly, and you'll be helping to keep quality Catholic programming on the air. To find out more, call Val at 317-870-8400. 317-870-8400. She can tell you all about it. Or email Valerie at CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Hello? Oh, Lord. Hi, how you been? Yeah. I'm sorry I haven't been picking up the phone lately. Yeah, I've been really busy doing, you know, school and work and church stuff. I know, Lord, yeah. Yeah, baptism, right. It's kind of like 24-7. I know, I'm really sorry about that. Yeah, I definitely still want to follow you. This is definitely something I want to do for life, yeah. Uh-huh. Reconciliation? That would be a good thing? Okay, well, I'm definitely going to do that. Soon? Yes, I'm going to do that today. Okay, I love you. I love you too.
God's calling. Are you ready to answer? Just a reminder from your friends here at Catholic Radio Indy.
Hello?
So, the scan button brought you here. Awesome. We like company. Get to know us. And if you have to leave, come back. You're always welcome. Catholic Radio Indy.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell, still in the cave, and thanks for listening to us. Mark Tuttle, Kemp Blanford. We've been talking about education, and I've covered a lot of territory in here. In this last segment of the show, Mark, let's take up the topic of where education might be headed. And specifically, let's get into maybe Catholic education and how that might be be distinguishable from other education that might be available to us.
Right. You know, I mean, there was just an online Bible conference where they were able to bring together all of the Catholic theologians, all of the Catholic scholars, a lot of EWTN radio personalities were involved with this, and they were able to make that available across the country for anybody that wanted to subscribe. There was a free subscription base, and then there was a paid subscription base where you would have access to these, you know, 90 or 100 different really high quality talks by these, you know, the some of the most prominent Catholic theologians that are out there right now. How the laity starts to take advantage of the new technology, the ability to educate, and then the secondary question of how much does that really matter? How important is that for your spiritual life to be well educated to where you're learning how to navigate, you know, the Bible at a level that I think most pastors and priests probably, you know, 100 years ago would have never dreamed of being able to have that much knowledge of the basis, the history, the philosophy, the scholarship involved in scripture. That's now right there at your fingertips and available. And how much of an impact on the spirituality does that have, or does that become kind of a distraction from the spiritual life? Do you have to be well educated to be a good Catholic?
I'm going to say yes. You should be as well educated as you're capable of being. So, because it's going to differ a little bit for each person based on talents, gifts, but also opportunity, time, resources, things like that. But yeah, and I'll tell you why. I'm a simple man, Mark. I'll go back to the Baltimore Catechism. Why did God create me? To know him, to love him, and serve him in this life so I can be with him forever in heaven. So we can't love, we're here to, the purpose of our life is to love God and to serve him. And we can't, the more we know God, the more we'll love him and the more we'll want to serve him. So built right into the most fundamental tenet of our theology is knowledge.
Right. And so in today's day and age, we are more educated than we were 200 years ago. We have more knowledge of scripture. We have more knowledge of church teaching. Almost all of us.
I don't know that we all do.
We have access in ways
we didn't before.
Yeah, a lot of Catholics have the Universal Catechism there at church. And, mm-hmm. and you're right, maybe not everybody. You know, maybe some people don't necessarily want to do this. Mm-hmm. But I would say even those who don't necessarily want to launch themselves into in-depth Bible study still probably have more knowledge of the Bible than a lot of people did 200 years ago. Our church, based on that, should be holier. We should have a lot more saints. We should have a lot more holy activity than we did in the church 200 years ago. Is that true? Do we? Are we a holier church right now?
I don't accept the premise. So I don't see that might be correlation, not causation in my mind. I would think that access to things like Formed, which a lot of parishes have, there's tons of, I will say one of the silver linings to the pandemic catastrophe is the huge influx of online content that's been developed and made available. As an example, here's where the technology, I think, really is in our favor. So my wife and I have been participating virtually in an online Bible study. And it's by a priest in this little parish in North Carolina. So here we are in Indianapolis, and we're doing Wednesday evening Bible study from a parish that's live streaming their parish Bible study. And we're just at home, kind of following along, right, and learning. Well, that's unimaginable, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I actually think our responsibility to learn and know the faith is quite a bit higher, because our excuses, in terms of at least access to high quality, at your fingertips, resources we have it all. Now we have other newer impediments, where access may have been more of an impediment 100 or 200 years ago. Now we have other, I would say, things that can get in our way, which is we have kind of a hyper busyness in our lives.
Right.
And so, we tend to be way over committed to lots and lots of things. And so then it's a time management piece sometimes, I would say.
Yeah, I think a lot of people fall into the trap of, when you go back to that formula in the Baltimore Catechism, to know, to love, to serve God, I think a lot of people fall into the trap of thinking that to know is to love and is to serve God. In other words, the more I study, the more Bible studies I go to, the more all of that, the more then I am loving and I am serving God. And they're obviously all connected, but they're three different activities. And knowing God is only a third of the spiritual life. And you know, you go back in the history of the church, you had very, very uneducated saints, very holy, uneducated saints. Bernadette, associated with Our Lady of Lourdes. You know, she was incredibly uneducated. Barely knew the rudiments to be able to receive First Communion. But nonetheless, a hugely, hugely holy saint. And you kind of got down to, I think you need to study and understand God and know God to the extent of your ability, but you also need to love God and serve God. And a lot of times all of the emphasis, not only on knowing God, but probably on knowing other things, gets in the way of that loving and serving part. And no amount of knowledge is going to substitute for that.
Well, there's different ways to get to know, right? God. If I was to study civil engineering, there's really only a couple of ways to do that, and that's going to involve textbooks and instruction. To get to know God, though, we can access textbooks and instruction, but we also have what? The sacramental life, right? We have Eucharistic adoration. We have the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. We have sacramentals like praying the Most Holy Rosary. So there's lots of ways to get to know God. Which is why if you read like a St. Thomas Aquinas and these great, like you're talking about, so many of the great saints may often lacked formal, what we call formal education. A St. John Vianney, right, wasn't known for his scholarship; he was known for his sanctity. Right. And so sanctity, so they can be, St. John Vianney was able to, in a certain sense, I would say, in a spiritual sense, penetrate to a very, very deep level, a knowledge and an understanding of God that goes far beyond what most of us have been able to do in our lives so far. So there's a different kind of knowing, I guess, there.
Yeah.
That's why the spiritual life is arguably more important, and the emphasis on the spiritual life, on the soul, that's always been never at the expense of the body, because we're embodied souls. But the soul is the most important, because the soul is the immortal part of us that endures forever.
Right, right. And, you know, education can be understood as, I mean, you go back to the, I guess, Locke and Hume and a lot of the early modern thinkers. And, you know, education is broken down into experience and then, kind of vicarious experience that you get through learning and reading and those types of things. But, you know, direct experience for them was the best way to learn something. Direct experimentation was the best way to learn science,
etc. And that's very limiting. I would say that's very limiting.
Yeah, but when it comes to the spiritual life, that really is how you come to know God, is that experience of God and through the direct experience of the spiritual life. And, you know, the academic learning, the Bible studies, the theology, all of that, that's to augment it, right? That's to support it and help it. But the main way that you come to know God is through that spiritual life.
I would say through the spiritual life, but I also think there's a few different paths. I think of converts, for example. There's many examples, like Peter Kraft, who I know you admire him too. I don't know, he's written like 100 books. He's a convert, and he read his. You hear it all the time. People who read their way
right
into the church.
Yep.
So they're not having an emotional experience, let's say, or that does, obviously it does happen, and may happen later on. But there's plenty of people who pick up the intellectual tradition of the church, and a show I really like, Called to Communion, Dr. David Enders. He read his way into the church, and so this intellectual tradition, that kind of knowing through reading, say, theology and philosophy, good Catholic theology, can bring you in there before you have that sort of encounter with Christ.
Right, because, you know, we encounter Christ within the church. We encounter him through the sacraments. We encounter him through the communal life of the church. We encounter him through, you know, loving our neighbor, loving God, and those types of things. And the more you know, the more that's going to bring you closer, and then the more that's
the more it's going to enrich
that experience as well.
Right.
The more it's going to, because you when you're looking at the mysteries of the faith, which is really what the sacraments used to be called. They used to be called mysteries. When mm-hmm. you're looking at those mysteries, you are never fully going to understand them. No matter how much education, no matter how much you try to educate yourself to understand them, you are not going to understand them fully. You have to experience them. But that experience is enriched and is made deeper the more you know, the more you understand, and the more you study about them.
Right.
And with that, we're going to wrap it up for this week on The Catholic Cave. For Mark Tuttle, for Timothy O'Donnell, I'm Kent Blanford. Go out and study something this year, this week, and educate yourself. Until next time, be holy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.